Okay, welcome to the Tipsy Archives. I am Rachel Liggy, and I'm joined by my friend Anne. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Hi, I'm Anne Honeycutt.
This isn't the first time you're podcasting.
No, it's not. I am a seasoned podcaster, but it's the first time that I'm on Tipsy Archives, which is exciting.
Yay.
Because I love it.
Oh, the very first time I met you, actually, you had told me that you had already listened to, like, every episode.
Yeah, I was like, oh, yeah, I like your podcast. And you were very, like...
It was the first time I'd ever met a stranger that had listened to it. Usually it was just like, you know, friends who were like, I checked it out because you told me to.
No. I mean, Louise, who's been on the podcast, was like, oh, my friend Rachel does this podcast. So it was a recommendation, but I was like, cool. And then I listened to all of it because I was totally, I had a job at the time where I was like, podcasts are the only thing that make me not cry.
Yeah. I take the bus a lot. So that's kind of my podcast
for
time.
Sure.
So, are you a Halloween person?
It's always Halloween in my soul.
Perfect.
Always.
Yeah, I'm definitely a Halloween person. This is the time of year I buy all the decorations for my house and, you know, new candles and towels, and I love Halloween. So Halloween's coming up.
Yeah, I actually say that October is like, I go, it's the first of Halloween, it's the second of Halloween. My October has been kind of crappy, but usually it's like every day I have like a spoopy video on Facebook.
And nice.
Ridiculous. And
my first tattoo is a Nightmare Before Christmas tattoo.
Nice.
The other day I was walking around, I think Michael's or something, and I was singing It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year to myself.
Yes. I have like a Google Play, like I use Google Play to like listen to music and everything like that. And Google Play goes, hey, it's October. Do you want to continue to listen to all of the Halloween music you started listening to last year? I'm like, yes, I want to listen to my vintage Halloween mix, which is literally like jazz era spooky songs.
Yeah. I'll have to find something fun to put on the intro.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So, was that me or you?
Yeah, it was you, homie.
Oh, Rachel, you're podcasting. Turn off your phone buzzing. So, Halloween's coming up.
Yes.
And, I went online and thought, like, you know, let's do something fun before Halloween happens that's spooky. And you and I came up with this idea to, we're gonna talk about some real life characters, murderers, and events that have inspired things on the show American Horror Story.
Which is one of the best shows ever.
Yeah, I've seen most of it. There are, I think it's now on the 7th season.
I can count that out. Murder House, Asylum, Coven, Freak Show, Roanoke. It's on its 6th season.
7th. It's on a 7th.
Oh, no, okay, so wait. It's Murder, Asylum,
Coven,
Hotel, Roanoke.
Freak Show. Not in that order, but that's all of them.
Hotel. No, Freak Show Hotel. There you go. Freak Show Hotel.
Roanoke.
And now it's
Roanoke
Cult.
Is the last completed one, and now Cult is on air right now.
Yes.
So, I just want to say, first off, if you haven't seen American Horror Story, you can still listen to this, because we are not going to talk about the show in great detail as much as we are going to talk about historical events.
Correct.
Scary, murdery, bloody historical events. So, it's still, like, of total interest to any of you, you know, true crime or history buffs out there. If you have seen some of American Horror Story, we are going to not... We're not going to go over storylines, and we're going to try not to give any spoilers, so you can still listen if you haven't heard all of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Good stuff. I'm so excited. I love Horror Story, and I love spooky murders. I wanted to talk about the Pied Piper of Hamelin, but...
Did you listen to the Dark Fairy Tales one?
Yes.
Yeah, so we did talk about that one in a bit of detail.
Yes.
But it's a good creepy story.
It's so creepy.
So yeah, if you want more creepy stories from the Tipsy Archives, the Dark Fairy Tales episodes are pretty good for that.
For sure. So
I guess we should start at the beginning, the first season.
Yes.
Of when American Horror Story... So the deal with the show is that every season is kind of a standalone story. It's not a continuous season one to season six story.
No, but if you are rewarded through... You were rewarded for your sticking with it. Because every season it builds on an internal continuity.
Yeah, eventually...
So each season you get, like, Easter egg after Easter after Easter egg.
Yeah.
But yes, each season is a particular moment in time around the world.
Season one, we start off, I think, in L.A., right?
Yeah.
And this is the murder house season.
Yes.
And as the title gives away, it's about a haunted and murdery house where it's difficult to live in and stay alive.
Full of murder.
Full of murder.
Murder and ghosts.
Yeah.
Yes. So the house is supposedly like a historical house where it was built and owned by a doctor who performed basement abortions, which at the time... Abortion was illegal, so he would do it for...
So this is a thing that did happen, although that character's not necessarily based on a particular character.
No.
But that's, you know, what's happening in the house. There's not a lot of historical, like, stuff in this season as much as there are in some other ones, but there are a couple of things.
Correct.
I think pretty early on in the season, we see someone who's a lot of people may be familiar with, and that's the Black Dahlia.
Yes. So the Black Dahlia was a patient of the doctor who created the murder house in the particular storyline. Mm-hmm. And she, in theory, died through botched anesthesia. But that is absolutely not how we know her.
Yeah, in real life, we don't really know... the person who did it was never caught, although there have been present-day theories. Mm-hmm. But we don't know exactly what happened to her. We do know that her name was Elizabeth Short. Mm-hmm. Her body was found in 1947. And like in the show, she's found cut in half, drained of her blood, mutilated, and her mouth sliced open from ear to ear. Sort of like a Glasgow smile.
Yeah.
Sort of. Yeah, so it was a, like, media sensation at the time because it was so brutal.
For sure.
And she was a beautiful young girl who hoped to be an actress.
Yeah, she had done, like, some background extra work and whatnot. And I know that around the time there was... She definitely had, like, the look that most young Hollywood starlets had. Mm-hmm. And so there was a theory that... like, it was a case of mistaken identity, and someone else was trying to kill a different Hollywood starlet.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah.
It's that sort of petite, pale, dark hair.
Yeah.
Dark, curly hair.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Alluring eyes, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, so gross and so gruesome, and I know that the Black Dahlia had a lot of, there was a lot of, at the time it was insane. It was like... Black Dahlia fever.
Well, and the fact that the way she was cut up was with almost surgical precision made them think that it was possibly a doctor or a surgeon that had done it. So they were looking into some, you know, people in the medical field.
Yeah.
But I don't think at that time they had any real suspects. I'm not an expert on the case, but yeah. Somebody came forward in 2014 claiming that they thought it was his dad that had done it.
Really?
Yeah, some Dr. George Hodo, who is now dead, and the son, who was an ex-cop, I guess, had found some evidence in the house. Again, sorry, I don't have that right in front of me, but there's if you want to look into that, you know, there's people have claimed, oh, I found, you know, my dad wrote a journal, or there was a photograph, or he drunkenly told me one night or something. So, like, there's no way to prove that now.
Yeah,
but,
for sure.
But there's been some more recent theories now. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Which is exciting.
Interesting thing to look up later on.
And then the other thing.
So the nurse murders.
Yes.
Which also happens in the murder house in the show, are based on the murders done by Richard Speck in 1966.
So he essentially would lure nurses into situations and then he would rape and murder them.
Well, there's one case. I don't know how many people he did this to, but he went into a dorm house, I guess probably of some kind of medical school, because... There was a bunch of nurses there, and he murdered and tortured and raped eight of them.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot of nurses.
In one night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this event in the show is based on that.
Yes.
He, of course, was caught, sentenced to death, but then died of a heart attack in prison after he'd been there for 25 years.
Wow. Was his sentence, like, a life imprisonment?
I mean, he was sentenced to death, but, mm-hmm. like, it seems like being on death row can take a really long time.
It does take a long time.
And then he just died of natural causes eventually.
Yeah.
So, American Horror Story definitely likes to pull from real-life serial killers.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it definitely shows a side of the producers that you can tell that they're just like, it's also Halloween in their soul all the time.
Yeah.
Because it's the guy who created Glee.
Which is so weird.
But also the guy who created Nip Tuck.
Okay.
Right? So it's Ryan Murphy.
Yeah.
And Nip Tuck is a very dark show.
Yeah. I've seen some of it. Not a lot of it, but
super extra dark.
But what a weird thing to go from this dark surgical show to Glee, which is singing and dancing high school kids, which has some very serious issues in it as well.
Yeah.
But still a lot of singing and dancing. You know, to American Horror Story.
I know. And now he does also American Crime Story, where he goes and does a different historical crime. So they did one where it was, like, literally the O.J. murder.
Have you heard of this show? I just found out about it, like, a few days ago, and it's, what's it called? It's the one about, like, creepypasta?
Oh, no, I haven't. I've heard of it.
Something Zero. Channel Zero.
Channel Zero. I've started watching it.
Okay.
It's awesome.
Okay.
It's so good.
That's on my list.
Yeah. Also, Black Mirror.
Oh, I've seen lots of Black Mirror.
Black Mirror is amazing.
Yeah.
No, Ryan Murphy is...
Things based off real life that make you uncomfortable.
Yeah. So, Ryan Murphy also is the producer and director of the Feud series. So, he did one with a feud between Bette Davis and Joan Crawford.
Hmm.
Yes. I think it's Susan Sarandon plays Bette Davis, and Joan Crawford is played by Jessica Lange.
Oh, okay.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It is just
so, I mean, so speaking camp. Of people that...
Yeah.
Another cool thing about American Horror Story is that they reuse a lot of the same actors season after season.
Yes.
Which is, like, I really like that.
It adds continuity.
It feels like an ensemble kind of thing,
for
right?
For sure.
Jessica Lange is in 5 seasons.
Yeah, her last season was Freak Show.
Yeah. I think that's 4 or 5. 4. She's in 4 seasons.
Yeah.
Because she's not in Hotel
Arena.
She is fantastic.
She was so great. And all of her roles are very varied and different. They have a very...
Evan Peters is in every season. Sarah Paulson is in every season.
She is.
She's not in every season, but Kathy Bates is in a number of them, and she's fantastic. We'll talk about this way in the future, but I just watched Roanoke, and she was amazing in that.
Yes, oh my gosh, Roanoke.
But this is one cool thing, is you get to see somebody like Jessica Lange play, like, different versions of fucked up and creepy women.
For sure. Absolutely. And it's just, like, it's a very rich internal continuity.
They must have such a strange family relationship in that cast.
Well, what's interesting is, I mean, yeah, they're all, like, really good friends and that sort of stuff.
But they're always acting out these just, like, horrific scenes together.
Yeah, right? And then the fact that, like, when they do bring people in, it's always just, like, they plug them in and they pick the right people.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, you see if that person shows up in the next season or if that was a one-off.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's wrap up Murder House here. There, like I said, there's not a whole lot more than that. They do definitely reference Columbine with the school shooting scene.
Yes.
I didn't really begin this episode with a trigger warning, but I think it was kind of implied
trigger
by
warning, Halloween we're talking about Murder Story. Yeah. And then there's also, like, there's characters in that particular season who are very, like, reminiscent of, like, the Manson family.
Oh, yeah.
Where they like, break into the house and, like, they do...
Kind of like a culty...
Culty ritual killing situation. Yeah. And then there's definitely...
So there's lots of nods throughout, like, basically the whole series to different historical events.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's,
we are going to gloss past a lot of them, and then some we're going to kind of, like, dig into deeper.
Yeah, it's definitely... when they have to go historical, they try very hard to, like, make it very much, like, in the genre of the era. Mm-hmm. They try really hard to bring you into that particular era of time. For sure.
Okay, let's move on to, speaking of a different era of time, let's move on to Asylum.
Oh, Asylum.
The second season. I have not watched the entire season. I watched a good chunk of it.
Uh-huh.
So you'll have to fill me in on a little bit of this stuff. There's not a lot of major historical characters, but there's a couple side characters here
that are alluded to or potentially.
So this is
historical.
So one of the things that, you know, is a historical horror show is the asylums in the 50s and 60s in general.
Yes,
especially this asylum is a Catholic Church run. Asylum, the ideas people had in the 40s, 50s, and 60s about people with mental illness, disabilities, you know, this is post-hysteria, but there's still a lot of, like, feelings around, like, women not really, I don't know, like, being able to speak for themselves, or if you weren't the cookie-cutter image of what a wife should be, even if you
Correct.
Identified if as you gay.
Were, yeah, if you were technically a quote-unquote sexual deviant, what that meant.
Yeah, you could end up in one of these asylums.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So the historical characters that they allude to in this particular season, it's...
So there's the doctor.
The doctor.
One of the main doctors of the asylum, Dr. Arden.
Yes, who's actually a Nazi doctor who is much like Joseph Mengele.
Yeah.
And
loosely based on Joseph Mengele, the Angel of Death.
For sure.
Who was a surgeon who worked for the SS in Nazi Germany and who sent a lot of people to gas chambers as well as doing horrifying experiments on children, twins.
Yeah.
Just like...
He did terrible things.
Terrible things.
But in the horror story universe, this particular doctor escaped Germany and went under an assumed name.
Which is what Joseph Mengele did as well.
Yeah.
He escaped and was not punished for his crimes. So,
but he was probably in Argentina and not in...
He likely did end up in South America.
Yeah. So in the show, this particular doctor is doing weird experiments. And the weird experiments are kind of tied into, like, gene mutation and all sorts of turning people into, like... weird monster type people, but then also he's implanting things into their bodies, much like the implants that people seem to get when they have had alien abductions. Yes.
So that ties us into a couple other characters
Correct.
That pop up in the show. Mm-hmm. Their names are Kit and Alma Walker.
However,
they're based on a real life couple.
Yep.
Who claimed to have been abducted in 1961.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the first sort of, I think, like, highly publicized alien abduction stories. And not the very first, but a very beginning or early claim of sort of the gray-type aliens that people claim to have seen with the big eyes and the gray skin. And I read today in a story that, for a long time, they kind of said, like, this is the first time people were talking about gray aliens, but apparently there had been an earlier episode of, like, an Outer Limits episode that they were like, oh, they could have seen that.
Yeah.
But they claimed that they didn't.
This was definitely during that, like, Roswell crash, the space race, the start of the Cold War era, where... alien abduction was a thing where people were like, oh my gosh, it's totally happening and whatnot. But there was also a time when there was a kind of a surge in, especially in children, there was a surge where children were like misremembering like sexual trauma that was happening to them.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. So you'll see instances of like kids have been abducted. And they explain, oh, why, you know, I was all of that stuff. But really what it is that they were repressing trauma happening to them. Which is like, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
Cause
I mean, and like...
humans are terrible.
Not to go there, but to tie it back sort of into the Catholic Church, I think that there was also a period of time where there was a lot of abuse going on that was unreported because people weren't talking about that kind of thing yet. So I can see how those things could have potentially correlated.
For sure.
Yeah.
And then just in regards to, like, the show itself, it shows a lot of institutionalized abuse.
Yes.
Which definitely back in that era was very, like, it was, like, rampant, really.
I mean, of course, you have lobotomies, which happened to thousands of people.
Yep.
I mean, and this is...
Like Francis Farmer.
Yeah, this is a horrific practice of basically putting a, you know, a spike in your eye socket, stirring your brain around, and then taking it out to make you into a not functional person.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, you don't even have to add... like ghosts
to this and mutant season. Monsters and like the devil and all sorts of other weird things because it has a very religious tone to it.
Yeah, or even just, you know, isolating people for days, weeks, months, you know, denying them food, spraying them with icy cold water. I mean, there's just all kinds of things.
The treadmill sort of started in insane asylums.
Well, and during this period of time, they're sterilizing a lot of people, too.
Yes, and they actually talk about that in the show.
Yeah.
So there is that. Another character that they bring up in American Horror Story Asylum is Anne Frank.
Yeah, there is a patient who claims to be Anne Frank, escaped from...
That she managed to actually escape the house and sneak on board a steamer ship and come to America and whatnot. She's under a different name. But yes, it's an interesting thing, especially since Anne Frank and Dr. Arden, like, it's the cultural thing of, it was after World War II. And so now they're like, well, this is, like, the shakedown of what after World War II is like, is that there are a lot of people who have trauma from being prisoners of war and also being interned. So the fact that, like, that sort of trauma is there, and it's definitely something that, like, would make somebody feel, like, unsafe. And but then also, like, I don't even think the diary had come out at that time.
Oh yeah, I don't know those details. I can definitely
check it.
We can definitely Google that.
Yeah, for sure.
But as most people probably know, Anne Frank was a young girl who was hiding in an attic with her family, because her Jewish family, they were hiding from Nazi soldiers.
Correct. Okay, no, apparently the book itself did get published in 1947.
Okay.
So
the world, a lot of people at this point would have known who Anne Frank was.
Yeah.
So, as I was saying, she was hiding with her family. The stories, we know it, and what likely happened is that they were eventually found, and they were all killed.
Yes.
But we have this kind of picture of her life, this, I don't know what, she's about 12 or so, at the time she's writing.
Yeah, she was a young teenager.
Writing the diary.
And, like, the diary has a lot of interesting things about it. There is a... And it depends on the version of the diary that people get, because they did abridge it. But, like, she was queer. Like, she was... she wrote in her diary that she was in love with a girl in her class. And so not only was she Jewish and a woman, she was also a queer person.
I've never heard that.
Yep.
Because I have not really... I mean, of course, I know, you know, the public image of who Anne Frank was, but I haven't actually read or studied her diary.
This was in
Amsterdam. Yeah.
Yes.
So they were born in Germany, but then they'd moved to Amsterdam.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I've been to Amsterdam, I've seen... I didn't go in the Anne Frank house, but I saw the outside of it, and I saw, like, a statue of her. And
there was a large kerfuffle of a year or two ago, maybe more. So in the diary itself, she talks about the tree outside. And they actually had to cut down the tree that was outside of the Anne Frank house recently because it had become diseased. And it was public outcry, everything. Like, it was a big deal.
But had it not been cut down, it would have kind of eventually just fallen over?
Essentially what it was is it had, like, a very aggressive form of blight. And if they had not cut down and disposed of the tree, it would have gotten pretty much... It would have spread throughout all the trees in the area.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yep.
Infected with a fungal disease.
Yep.
Scheduled to be cut down to prevent it from falling on surrounding buildings.
Yep.
And that was November 2007.
Couple years, 10 years, whatever.
Ten plus.
Yeah, it was in recent history for mm-hmm. sure. So yes, that's so
interesting too, to kind of tie in post World War II mm-hmm. in a couple of different ways.
Yeah,
through that show, through the doctor, and then through, you know, this girl who claims to be Anne Frank.
Yes, and then the fact mm-hmm. is that which shows that, like, Ryan Murphy did a lot of research into, like, all of the different cultural, like, touchstones.
Oh, I believe it.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah. There's so many references.
One of my favorite things about that specific season is they have the singing nun who, it was a French-Canadian nun who had a public access television show, and she would play the guitar.
Okay, yeah. This is ringing a bell.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. she played the guitar, and the song is Nick and Nick. I don't know. Anyway, it goes do 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 do, and in specific in the show,
yeah,
that's the only song.
Oh, really?
They allow people to listen to in the show.
Oh, goodness. Well, that'll drive you crazy.
Yeah. That specific nun, she was extra, like, very popular at the time, and they actually found out that she was a lesbian, and she ran off with one of the other nuns.
Ooh.
Yeah! Scandalous!
Canadian heritage moments.
I know. Let me get her name, because she was, like, famous, singing...
Jean-Paul Marie?
Or yes.
Jeannie Dekkers?
Yes. Belgian singer.
Cool.
Yep. Singing nun.
Yeah, I have the faintest memory of that, but it's...
We're gonna listen to the song for a second.
Okay.
Don't sue us, Catholic Church, or whoever owns the thing on it.
If it's over 50 years old, isn't it, like, public property by now?
Domain? Maybe, I don't know. Outgoing.
Now listen to this song and imagine being stuck in a mental institution in the 50s or 60s.
Oh yeah, it's terrifying for sure.
À l'époque où Jean sans terre d'Angleterre était le roi, Dominique, notre père, combattit les albigeois.
It's my jam.
You just listen to that at home.
Well, so I was really into Cher for a long time.
Well,
yeah, of course. And Mermaids was one of my favorite movies as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And the character... Winona Ryder's character mm-hmm. in there was obsessed with the Catholic Church.
Oh, like so, me.
Yeah. But they were Jewish.
Yeah.
But she was obsessed with the Catholic Church. And so this was a song that she would listen to when she was upset with her mother. Who would share.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I haven't watched that in a while.
Oh, it's so good.
Okay. So let's... I think that's pretty good for Asylum.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on to... what is a very rich in history season.
Sexy, sexy Coven.
Yeah,
Coven. Oh, Coven.
You love Coven.
I love Coven.
There are a lot of elements of Coven that I did really like, because it does take place in New Orleans, which has always been something, a really fascinating area to me, probably because I read too much Anne Rice in high school.
High five, girl. Yep.
So there's a number of, like, real characters Correct. That they use in Coven, which of course centers around a coven of witches that yes. has been established for like 200 years yeah. at this point.
Yes.
It's a bunch of bitchy teenage girl witches through this season, and a yes. number of scary things that happens to them.
The witches in general are being hunted, and yeah. so they have this all-girls school that they use as a cover to protect the last of the witches that are have their powers kind of show up when they're in their teens, which is awesome. And the historical characters that they bring in there are perfect. That's so good.
So gosh, I mean, which one do we even start with?
Well, let's talk about Delphine Lalaurie.
Okay, Madame Delphine Lalaurie. So she...
Piece of work.
She is a piece of work. I mean, this this is a horror story that you don't need to embellish.
Nope.
Really. Like, it's... She's... This woman is just a crazy, murderous, horrible person. Mm-hmm. She was a New Orleans socialite. Mm-hmm. She, I think, was on her second or third husband.
Yeah.
It's her second. Because she comes into this...
She was independently wealthy.
Yeah. She already had money. And she married this doctor. Mm-hmm. Who, and at this point, she already had a couple of daughters.
Yes.
And, you know, they like to throw parties. And I think she had a pretty good reputation for a while. But then rumors did start kind of swirling around her. I think maybe a couple complaints from, you know, her slaves. So, mm-hmm. Because, of course, this is a time when... You know, everybody has slaves.
Yeah, slavery is a common thing.
Yeah.
And, like, she essentially was, like, the Elizabeth Bathory of her time.
Yeah.
She was very vain and very... she was prone to bouts of hysteria. And she was very definitely, like, she had weird paranoia around people and around interactions. With, like, the public. So even though she was a socialite and she'd throw these grand parties, she'd have to get, like, incredibly trashed the entire time.
I remember hearing, like, I listened to So Stuff You Missed in History Class mm-hmm. has a two-part... actually, about all the characters we're going to talk about in Coven, mm-hmm. they have at least, I think, two-part episodes on each one of them.
Because they're so fascinating. And, they're, like, just full of cool...
Yeah.
Cool trivia.
They
cool
stuff. Talk about how some people were trying to defend her by saying, like, oh, no, she's so nice to her slaves. Like, when she has a little bit of wine left in her glass, she'll let her slave finish it. And stuff like that, where it's like, okay, well, that kind of sounds nice, but at the same time, you're just giving them, like... A couple drops of your leftover wine.
Yeah, that doesn't make any damn sense. But after she disappeared.
Well, so nobody really knew
yeah.
what was happening in the house mm-hmm. Until there was a fire. I mean, I think there was a story that she had, there was a young slave girl and she had, I don't know, broken something, gotten in some minor trouble, and Madame Lellery was freaking out at her, and the girl ran up on the roof or something, mm. and the girl ended up hurting herself or dying, or I think she maybe fell off the roof. Hey, this is the only time that, you know, while she was living there, that people started to be like, well, what's going on? Mm-hmm. So suddenly there's a fire in her house, and she, you know, grabs her daughters, her, you know, some of her belongings, you know, people are saying, oh, you know, don't you have slaves inside? She's like, oh, no, it's fine. Like, you know, she's saying, like, oh, either they're not there, like, don't worry about it.
Yeah, they're out of town, they're running errands, yeah. they're doing whatever.
So she goes and hops in her carriage, you know, basically waves goodbye to everybody, and then she's gone.
See ya. Like, yeah.
People don't know what happened to her, where she went. She never really resurfaced again. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, they go in, once the fire's out, people go in and they start finding, you know, the police or whoever.
Corpses.
Yeah, they're, like, these horror chambers, these torture yeah. chambers of her slaves mm-hmm. shackled up, buckets full of limbs, mm-hmm. you know, parts sewn together,
yeah.
you know, genital mutilation and, like, sex, quote-unquote, sex change operations that, of course, didn't do anything.
Yeah.
So. Just literally other parts sewn.
Mutilating people.
Cut on sure. other parts.
Yeah, and just, like, they would find, like, collections of teeth.
Yeah.
You're like, what? This is terrifying.
So, given that her husband was a doctor, mm-hmm. too, mm-hmm. you know, it's very possible that he was taking part in these experiments. Mm-hmm. It does seem like, in legend, a lot of it is really attributed to her. Mm-hmm. And I don't know necessarily why they think that is. Maybe it's just kind of more her public reputation and how... I don't know, kind of yeah. crazy she was.
I mean, and that's also the same with Elizabeth Bathory, is mm-hmm. that, like, the honest-to-goodness truth was Elizabeth Bathory was a well-educated Hungarian aristocrat, mm-hmm. Part of the royal family, all of that, and they used the fact that her husband was a very brutal general. Who would mm-hmm. torture people in and on the grounds mm-hmm. as a way to say, oh, well, if her husband does it, she does it too.
Yeah.
And, like, the Hungarian royalty and the government, like, seized her lands and, like, walled her up in a room.
Yeah.
And, like, they exiled her from court. Where, I mean, as... I'm not sure that Madame Lalaurie was exactly innocent in this sort of thing. But they also, like, they found, like, beauty products that she had made that very obviously had, like, pieces of person in it.
Yeah, they show in one of the first couple episodes of Coven, mm-hmm. The portrayal of her is that she's smearing blood on her face as a, like, a beauty cream.
Yeah. To supposed to tighten...
tighten the pores.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
So this woman really was a monster.
Yep. She was.
And she, you know, she is a character in mm-hmm. that season.
Played by the Miss Kathy Bates.
Miss Kathy Bates. I think that's the first time that's how she shows up in the show.
Yes.
And she, of course, is great.
And she nails it. It's so good.
And in the show, she has a rivalry with Marie Laveau.
The Voodoo Queen of New Orleans.
The Voodoo Queen. And now, so Delphine Lalaurie was sort of the late 18th, early 19th century. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to see here if it, like, quote unquote, real life, if it would have made sense if these women... Yeah, they would have been around during some of the same decades. So yeah. Could they have associated with each other? It's not super likely because of, you know, maybe their classes or the people yeah. they're hanging out with, but it's not impossible. They could have.
Yeah.
The show builds it up that they have this
rivalry that Delphine Lalaurie turned her lover into a minotaur.
Right. Turned Marie Laveau's lover yeah. into a minotaur.
So, yeah, she was a voodoo high priestess in the area. And what she was what they called at the time a mulatto. So she was biracial. And the cool thing about her is it wasn't that she was she practiced voodoo because that's, like, the indigenous
religion
of the Afro-Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
She was a midwife.
Yeah, this is based on Voodoo, which is, like, from
yes.
Haiti.
Yes. Yeah. So she was essentially, she was really just she was a midwife, people.
Yeah, so
she wasn't a witch. She was a midwife.
A lot of voodoo yeah. stuff at that time. I mean, it was healing. It yeah. was giving people good luck trinkets.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Talking to them about their problems. Yeah. Kind of a social worker. Like, if, you know, you had a problem with your husband, she'd give you, like, advice and a bottle of rum with some chili peppers in it and, you know, tell you to...
Now, having said that, yes. I have done a little bit of studying on some of the voodoo practices mm-hmm. from, you know, Haiti and some of the Caribbean islands. Mm-hmm. There are some stuff that, I mean, it's a lot of ritual performance.
Yes.
So it's performance-based, but it is quite theatrical and a little bit scary looking from the outside.
Yes.
So,
but it's also, like...
It makes sense that people would look at that and see the masks.
Yes.
And there is some animal sacrifice, usually chickens, yeah. things like that.
And
that it would be quite frightening looking.
Group dancing, yeah. drumming.
Like a lot of ecstatic sort of dancing,
yes.
yelling,
yeah.
and that kind of thing. And the sort of what we know now as zombies did grow out of folklore based on
yes.
Those kinds of beliefs where stories where people would be resurrected. But of course it's, you know, it's not necessarily what you think.
Yeah.
Roots are different.
For sure. Like, and it's things like, if you're raising someone from the dead, well, most of that is actually somebody was very, very, very ill
mm-hmm.
and they were almost dead
mm-hmm.
and they were able to nurse that person back to life.
So here's a random funny fact.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen that Clive Barker movie, The Serpent and the Rainbow?
No.
I haven't seen it either. But okay. It's based on this anthropologist mm-hmm. who goes to Haiti to learn how they are resurrecting their so-called zombies.
Mm-hmm.
And, it, you know, it's this whole kind of, like, comes this, like, horror story. The mm-hmm. anthropologist who wrote that book,
mm-hmm.
Which the movie is very obviously, like, heightened, fictionalized version mm-hmm. of what he did, but he did really go to Haiti and work with a bunch of people. He taught my anthropology class last year.
That's awesome!
Yeah.
That's so cool.
So he talked a lot about some of the sort of, like, because he's an ethnobotanist, so he went there trying to figure out what the actual, like, plants and chemicals mm-hmm. were that they were giving people to, you know, sort of, like, reanimate dead bodies or whatever it was they were doing. And he couldn't figure it out because it's, you know, all very vague and, you know, folklorish. But it was really interesting to have him be our teacher and hear some of his stories, which were just, like, pretty crazy.
Yeah. There's also a lot of, I'm looking at the Wiki article, about Marie Laveau. There is an artist, her name is Renee Stout, who uses Marie Laveau as a motif in their work. There's also, around New Orleans, there are murals of her. She's pretty revered. Like, it's definitely...
Yeah, she was very respected in her day as well as now.
For sure. And, yeah, like, there's murals of her in Louisiana. Like, there's murals of Frida Kahlo in Mexico. Like, that sort of, like, amazing sort of stuff like that. And apparently...
They're, like, old-school feminist icons.
Exactly. Jimmy Buffett wrote a song about her.
The Misfits wrote a song about her, too.
She's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she is portrayed in the show by Angela Bassett.
Queen!
Yeah. And so I love the portrayal of her, too, is that... Marie Laveau is kind of immortal because of the magic that she uses.
Yeah.
And she's a present-day hairdresser with all her girls in the beauty shop.
Correct.
And Marie Laveau actually did do hairstyling in her time.
Yes, she did. She did.
So it's kind of a modern-day take on who she would be today, maybe.
Yes.
She's heavily so fictionalized, but based on a really wicked, still cool awesome. Lady.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And... The other character who pops up...
is way in the future, comparatively.
Yeah, so this is this character, the X-Men of New Orleans, terrorized the city in 1918 and 1919. Mm-hmm. And basically, mostly attacking Italian grocers. Not exclusively, but
mostly.
But mostly. Italian grocers. Seriously. So he was breaking into their homes kind of by sticking a chisel in their doors and hammering the locks off, like popping it off.
Mm-hmm.
And then often, you know,
clean,
somebody...
simple.
Yeah, he'd often, you know, bash a head in. He's often a husband and wife, you know, bash a head in, bloody bodies somewhere. Mm-hmm. And then, like, a couple times they would find, like, a pile of bloody clothes in the bathroom, like, as if he'd maybe... popped on a new outfit and then just, like, walked out into the night kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So this happened a number of times, and, like, the city was very terrified.
Yeah. It's like the Son of Sam or the Zodiac Killer.
Yeah. And this guy also never found. So it says 6 to 10 ? dead / injured. Never caught.
Never caught.
There is... there's a little bit of a lull for a bit, I think, and, you know, and then he pops up again. And then he sent a letter to a local newspaper. And, like, the letter is pretty awesome. So
I'm going to read us a letter?
I'm going to read you a letter. I'm going to take a swig of this wine.
It's full-bodied and red.
It is. It's actually kind of drying my mouth.
No, really? I love it.
So,
water.
For our podcast, I was like, whoa, American Horror Story, I better drink some American wine. That well-known American wine. But I got the creepiest bottle I could find, and it's the Apothic Dark.
It's delightful. Yeah. I love it. I'm a red wine whore.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you like... I like it, too. I lean a little bit more towards the whites, but I often feel like when I'm talking about murder, I need to drink red wine.
Wine? That's great. I love that. Perfect.
This is the Axeman's letter to a local paper in 1919. Esteemed mortals of New Orleans.
Sorry, Bravo!
They have never caught me, and they never will. They have never seen me, for I am invisible, as the ether that surrounds your earth. I am not a human being, but a spirit and a demon from the hottest hell. I am what you New Orleans and your foolish police call the Axeman. When I see fit, I shall come and claim other victims. I alone know whom they shall be. I shall leave no clue except my bloody axe, besmeared with the blood and brains of whom I have sent below to keep me company. If you wish, you may tell the police to be careful not to rile me. Of course, I am a reasonable spirit. I take no offense at the way they have conducted their investigations in the past. In fact, they have been so utterly stupid as to not only amuse me, but His Satanic Majesty, Francis Joseph, etc. What? But tell them to beware. Let them not only discover who I am, for it would be better that they were never born than to incur the wrath of the Axeman. I don't think that there is such need of a warning, for I feel sure that the police will always dodge me as they have in the past. They are wise and know how to keep away from all harm. Undoubtedly, you New Orleans think of me as some horrible murderer, which I am. But I could be much worse if I wanted to. If I wished, I could pay a visit to your city every night. I could slay thousands of your best citizens, and the worst. For I am in the closest relationship with the Angel of Death. Now, to be exact, at 12:15 earthly time, on next Tuesday night, I will pass over New Orleans. In my infinite mercy, I am going to make a little proposition for you, and here it is. I am very fond of jazz music, and I swear by all the devils in the nether regions that every person shall be spared whose home has a jazz band playing in full swing at the time I have mentioned. If everybody has a jazz band going, well then, so much better for you. One thing is certain, that if some of your people who do not have jazz out on Tuesday night will get the axe.
That's amazing. That is so funny.
Yeah, he's just like, I just need everyone. So maybe, like, is this a jazz musician who...
Sup, yo?
He was, like, actually just trying to promote his band.
What I love, like, oh, man. Gosh, that's so great.
Just a couple more lines.
Okay.
Well, as I am cold and crave the warmth of my native Tartarus, and it is about time to leave your earthly home, I will cease my discourse, hoping that thou wilt publish this, and it may go well with thee. I have been, am, and will be the worst spirit that ever existed, either in fact or realm of fancy, the Axeman.
That is epic.
And they published it.
Of course they did.
And on Tuesday night, there was jazz everywhere in New Orleans. And good. Nobody was murdered. So it worked.
That's great! I wish things like that would happen more often.
Yep.
Wow.
So, yeah, and then...
Rachel was too damn spoopy for me.
He was never caught, and I don't think after that anybody was murdered, and that's basically it.
And now people just listen to jazz all the time in New Orleans.
Yeah, I mean, I think they probably did before that, but...
Yeah. But yeah. Now, they really do.
Like, part of me feels like anybody could have written that letter.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But, like, part of me really hopes that it was him.
Yeah. That's really great.
So they use the Axeman as a ghost killer who mm-hmm. who shows up in this season as well.
Yes. Which is so great. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I want to say Danny Houston, but I think that's his son. Houston. It's the Houston. Angelica Houston's brother.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's Danny Houston.
Cool.
Anyway, he's good.
He's great in it. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. I also like how they have a historical character who's not a historical character in it, which is they have Stevie Nicks.
Oh, yeah.
So Stevie Nicks in American Horror Story is part of the witch coven.
Yes.
Like, she's legitimately a witch.
Well, first there is a witch, not Stevie Nicks, who basically just emulates Stevie Nicks and is just, like, so into her.
Yeah, she loves Stevie Nicks.
She basically just is her.
Yeah.
But then Stevie Nicks actually shows up because she's in the cup.
Yeah, because she's actually an honest-to-goodness, like, book witch. And then Misty, who's the witch who loves her, just, like, loses her damn mind. Yeah. She's like, what?
And then Stevie Nicks gives her a shawl.
Yeah, and Stevie Nicks also does an excellent, like she literally plays has a music piano. Video
yeah.
in the show.
Yeah.
Which is so great.
Yeah.
I actually really love, like, the music that they put in these shows, mm-hmm. like, in the shows, because it's, like, historical, but not historical. So, yes, having Stevie Nicks.
Well, I mean, it's the creator of Glee.
Yeah, for sure. And, like, Nip Tuck always had a really great, like, an excellent soundtrack. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to use Stevie Nicks for this, and we're going to make her a witch, because, I mean, Stevie Nicks is a practicing pagan. Like, she...
Awesome.
Yeah, she's amazing. Mm-hmm. And so, but the fact that she's like, well, of course I'm going to be in the Coven episodes, duh, is really great.
I wonder if he reached out to her, or if she reached out to him, or if they already knew each other, or how that happened.
I don't know.
Yeah.
He probably reached out to her, and then she's so fucking awesome. She's like, yeah, of course. I'd love to.
It was definitely have a perfect, shawl. It was a perfect fit.
Yeah. Have a shawl. Have a shawl. It was really beautiful. Yeah. So, and then Coven has a really interesting, an interesting take on witch hunts in general. So, they talk about how being a witch is genetic, much like in the X-Men, how, like, being an X-Man is, like, being a mutant is
genetic. Or, like, being a muggle or being a wizard.
Yeah, yeah. So, for them, it's, you are a descendant from a witch in Salem.
If I lived in that world and I wasn't a witch, I'd be so pissed.
I'm a witch. yeah, so, like, they are descendants of the women of Salem.
Right.
In fact, Queenie is supposed to be, like, the great-great-great-great-granddaughter of Tituba. So that's, like, a Tituba being the witch in Scarlet Letter? No.
Yeah, that doesn't ring a bell to me.
No, not Scarlet Letter, the other one.
Oh, The Crucible?
The Crucible.
Okay.
Tituba's the slave woman.
Oh, interesting.
In The Crucible. So, that's supposed to be, like, they're using,
literature.
Literature.
But, I mean, was that a real character, based on, like, a historical person? And, like, The Crucible's a book.
I don't know. I think what they're doing is they're saying that the book, The Crucible, the characters who are actually in the book of the Crucible, it was quote-unquote fiction, but it isn't.
Right.
So those specific people are actually, like, actual witches and actual people.
I would love to go to New Orleans and do, like, any amount of historical tour or...
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, as little as I want to go to the States right now, that's one of the few places that I have always wanted to go.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And stalk Trent Reznor.
Does he live there?
Oh, yeah. Trent Reznor and Anne Rice. Oh. They live in side-by-side townhouses.
Oh, my God.
I know.
I would die.
I would soups die. Yeah, so that's part of the whole thing of Coven is that they're descendants of Salem witches.
I feel like that whole season is probably steeped in all kinds of, like, little New Orleans,
bits of history. Queenie goes into the underworld.
Yeah.
And she meets Papa Lipa, who is a
major figure in voodoo mythology.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yes. Who's kind of like a trickster.
Like a Baron Samedi, but not Baron Samedi. He's like a different guy.
Yeah, he's definitely a trickster god and that sort of thing. And actually, I think they talk about Papa Legba, and I believe Marie Laveau is going to... they're going to feature prominently in the second season of American Gods.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Which is a great show, and people need to watch it.
Great show.
So good.
They at some point did reveal as well that the original Coven Witch is based on a Celtic goddess that does also come up in a later season.
Yes.
I can't say her name because it is very difficult to pronounce, but it starts with an S. Maybe we'll look it up when we get to that season.
Yes.
When we talk about that.
Yes.
But that kind of gets tied in later, that she comes up in a later season of American Horror Story, and then they say, well, that was the original witch from the Coven Witches as well.
Yes.
She's based
on... She's the first witch.
The first witch.
In the U.S.
Okay. Cool. Well, that's the first three seasons of American Horror Story.
For sure.
Not like... We already talked for an hour.
I know.
That's why we have to split this into two.
Exactly.
So, you listen to this one, stay tuned, or watch the set, or watch. You could watch it. It wouldn't be very interesting, because it's a podcast.
Just stare at it, like, going one, two, three.
But tune in
to
the second part. Yes. We're going to talk about the next three seasons and all those characters. So before I wrap this up, do you want to just plug your thing real quick?
Yeah. So I run I'm currently doing a bunch of editing on it, but I have started a podcast called Tell Me Your Nightmares, which is what it sounds like.
So I've seen you post about this, and I actually assumed that it was a live performance thing.
So it's a live show that we record, and it is Tell Me Your Nightmares. So I have very vivid, violent nightmares.
Great.
And I keep a dream journal because I was raped by
hippies. American Horror Story is just, like, no big deal for you.
No, not at all. Like, yeah. I watched Black Mirror and Channel Zero and, like, American Horror Story.
You're, like, cute.
Yeah, I'm like, whatever, this is whatever. Like, I watch horror movies all the time. I literally, if I'm, like, working at home doing whatever I like, I'm like, I want to pop Saw on. Like, that sort of thing. Because it's Halloween in my soul.
I watch those kind of movies and I'm just like, what a cool, example of really good makeup.
Yeah, right?
Mm-hmm. Fun.
I mean, also, like, we live in Hollywood North, right? So for me, I'm like, oh, I know that person. I know you did all that work anyway. So Tell Me Your Nightmares is a show where I talk about my nightmares. I have a guest come on who talks about their nightmares. We have a couple competitions. Like, we have an online competition where people submit their nightmares. If they are in the city, they get to come on the show and like say it. If not, then I like tell people the nightmares and then they get a prize pack and all that.
So now that I know that this is going to be a podcast and not a live performance, that makes me more interested.
Yeah, you should actually still come to the live shows. It's super fun. And then also the audience themselves, they give us, like, they write down their nightmares.
Cool.
And so then we read those out too.
Yeah.
And then we have a spooky pajama contest.
I got some real spooky pajamas.
Yeah, I have spooky pajama contest, and then I also let people rent out my stuffed animals.
Aww.
Yeah.
I would never let anybody do that.
Well, like, it's very, like, it's controlled.
Yeah.
They have to, like, put their name and their phone number and, like, take a picture of them with my stuffed animal and, like, send it to my email so that I, like, know who stole the animal.
Yeah.
No one's stolen any of my animals. That's good. Tell Me Your Nightmares is
do you have, like, a jam? Like, a Twitter or an email or that?
We're in the process of changing some things up. So, currently, if you go to Facebook and you search Anne Honeycutt Creative Being, all of my stuff is going to be posted on that Facebook page.
Cool. Yep. And when I post this and if you have more stuff, I can always, like, retweet your info and whatevs.
Perfect.
But, okay, let's wrap this up so we can record the second half.
Heck yeah!
And, of course, thank you so much for listening to the Tipsy Archives. If you want to email me for any reason, you have any ideas for podcasts, or you have comments on what we've talked about, I would love to hear from you. Mm-hmm. You can email me at thetipsyarchives@gmail.com or follow us at tipsyarchives. Thanks for listening.